Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. We are live from Café on Seine in Dublin's Fair City. Thank you. We've got a very, very special night ahead tonight. We've got some wonderful guests to preview and talk us through this coming weekend's Guinness Six Nations, none more so than Ireland and England in Twickenham on Sunday.
We have an Australian international and a Leinster stalwart and legend, babysitter and father figure to all those little D4 brats, Scott Fardy. And we have the Ireland captain from 2010 to 2014, World Cup semi-finalist and regular on RTE, Fiona Coughlan. So I think everybody's getting very excited.
We've also got the ever-present and impressive Gerry Flannery, who will be on to regale us of his tales playing against England. One in particular I want to talk to him about is why he called Steve Thompson a fat in Twickenham and for what reason that happened. So we will get to that.
That nowadays, would you?
No, I think his mother came down pretty hard on him, but I think the rest of the world would come down pretty hard on him.
Nowadays, you'd have to say, your BMI was large.
Yes.
Your BMI was above 30, mate.
Well, look, we'll ask him when he gets here.
He's a potty mouth fla.
Yeah.
But he's tidied his image up a little bit since then. He's got a family now, so look forward to hearing about that transition. Mm. Anyway, Penguins. I can't believe, like, we threw that out. We threw it out one episode off the cuff. We're like, can we think of a more derogatory way to describe the people who like our show? And we came up with Penguins. And you love it. Why do you love it so much?
I met a penguin at the traffic lights in Castle Troy the other day. And he was like, I'm a penguin. Tim, the penguin. And I was walking the twins, and he looked into the pram as if to just make sure that I wasn't telling lies about having twins. He was like, I was like, yes, they're there, they're alive, they're breathing. Look, I was like, Jesus. But yeah, I don't think we have found a reason why to give Penguin of the Week, but I'm just going to give it to Tim for being a nice penguin. So thank you, Tim. That Penguin of the Week goes to you. But have you all had a nice Valentine's Week? Penguins, yeah.
Valentine's week is not a big is that not a big date in your diaries? The only reason it's a big date in my diary is because I've spent a lot of time with Barry over the last couple of years, and my wife Anna is jealous, and rightly so. It's very special. So she said, "Listen, Valentine's night, we're getting a big night out, and we are going to see Dirty Dancing at the cinema." And I thought, brilliant. Dirty Dancing. Do you remember, if anybody listened into the Cork episode, the Cork live show, Barry did a whole big spiel about Star Wars, and the penguins were just eating out of the palm of his hand. What's penguin food? Whatever penguin food is.
That fish.
Fish, yeah. Oh yeah. It's pretty obvious, actually. I got bogged down in detail, but he finished up and he was in flow. He was just killing it. Everything he said, they were hanging on every word.
Stop.
And he finished up and he came over to me afterwards. And I just went, and I felt like the father in Dirty Dancing. And I said, Barry, you were wonderful out there. After the final dance of the summer. So Dirty Dancing has been on my radar a bit. So Anna said, we're going to Dirty Dancing for Valentine's night. Halfway through the movie, I said, she's jealous. She turned to me and she goes, you better not be thinking of Barry, are you?
And were you?
I was, yeah.
He rang me the next day. He was like, man, have you seen Dirty Dancing? And I was in the doghouse. This was a Saturday after Valentine's Day, and I got on the piss the Friday night with my mates on Valentine's night, thinking because we kids and stuff that I didn't really need to make an effort anymore. When I woke up, she was really pissed off, but he was like, man, I went to Dirty Dancing with Anna last night. She loved it. You should watch it with Orla. So I was like to Orla, we watched Dirty Dancing tonight. And she was like, I'd love to do that. So I thought I was kind of making up for it, and then I started taking notes while I was watching it, and she was like, what are you taking notes for? I was like,
that's so romantic.
I was like, this is going to be perfect for the show on Monday. So I started halfway through kind of thinking, am I baby or are you Swayze? Or are you Swayze? Am I baby? Or
I was
versa?
Keen. I was keen for you to be baby.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I know you're kind of more edgy. You've got the piercings. Yeah. And you've got
You've all seen Patch or fucking Dirty Dancing, or this is absolute wallop.
Well, more importantly, you were spoiling it.
Yeah.
Spoiling the ending.
Yeah.
So Pat, you've got a role in Dirty Dancing. You're the father. I thought I was the father. Just so proud of baby, but that doesn't work. We have to be the main two characters in Dirty Dancing. I've always loved Dirty Dancing. We used to watch Dirty Dancing on the Under-21s World Cup when we were in Argentina. And can you imagine a team full of meathead rugby guys watching Dirty Dancing? Because the previous World Cup had played well, they got to the final. So we were staying at the same hotel as South Africa and New Zealand. They were staying at the third floor. They were just above us. We were watching Dirty Dancing. One of the lads was like, close the door if the Springboks walk past and catch us watching Dirty Dancing. It doesn't bode well for the weekend. After the Cork show, I wanted to find out what the one line was from the father. You were wonderful out there. You were amazing out there. I couldn't work out what it was. So I went down a YouTube rabbit hole and watched an hour of Dirty Dancing clips. And I was singing and dancing all the way to Dublin. And then it dawned on me, I was going to Dublin for a business meeting. My day job is selling software to sports teams. And I should have been preparing for that meeting, but like I was moonlighting as this Dirty Dancing enthusiast.
I love how I'm rubbing off on you a little bit with my absolutely ridiculous analogies. But I have another one for you. So the Star Wars one was a bit far-fetched, but this week I've gone with something I think a little bit more for everyone. So I think you'll all remember when Trimby first came on the scene in 2005, it was like this new superstar from Ulster, and we were very excited about him. Then he kind of disappeared for 4 or 5 years. But then Joe Schmidt came and he saw something in him that no one else saw, and he became like his teacher's pet, almost like a pet, like a dog. Like he saw Trimby as like a golden retriever, like foolish and kind of eager and over energetic, that would just chase Conor Murray's box kicks all day and not give out about it. So he was like, he started building a little army of dogs. So Conor Murray was like this perfectly pristine, beautiful French poodle with a beautiful posture. And he had this trick where he could kick the ball really high in the air. And then this energetic golden retriever just run after it with his tongue hanging out of his mouth and like just overexcited. But then they had to like train you out of dropping the ball back at Conor Murray's feet afterwards, just wanted to get a little pat in the head.
Yeah, occasionally I would run up into the stand and I would like look at Joe and I would like roll over onto my back and wait for him to rub my tummy. And he was embarrassed. He's like looking, he's going, go away from me, would you? Go away. We've got a test match to win.
Paw. Other paw. And then, yeah, I rolled on and it was like, Tyke Furlong is like that dog that you walk into someone's yard or of a farmer and they've got this dog that they've been feeding scraps off the table and you're like, the fucking size of the dog. What have you been feeding him? Keith Earls is like that little rabbit Jack Russell that's outside the gate of a house just barking at you and you cross the road before you walk past his gate. Devin Toner is like some sort of Irish wolfhound or...
Sean O'Brien is he's Lassie because no one understands what he says, but then they just go, okay, dead on, that'll do. What's that, Sean? The kids are trapped down the old mine shaft. Okay, Sean, nice one.
Johnny Sexton is that boxer dog that's like fucking bit rabid and like he's at his best when you just let him be a dog and he's like biting people and fighting and on, shouting at the ref. And like, he's just drooling everywhere. And then Joe Schmidt was like, no, I'm going to make you captain and I need you to be really polite and obedient. And you only shit when I tell you to shit and you only piss when I tell you to piss. And you take the superpower away from him because he's a dog. He just wants to be a dog. And that's why I think where Joe Schmidt got it wrong. He overtrained all his dogs and like brought them to Crufts, which is the World Cup, and made them run through all the little hoops. And they're like, we just want to be dogs. And now, who's the new coach? Andy Farrell. Andy Farrell is like the real mountain dog man. There used to be a guy in Limerick called Willie Three Toes who used to walk around with three toes, or else he was missing three toes, I'm not sure. And he had a load of dogs and goats, and he'd walk around, and it was mental, but everyone knew that the dogs loved him, so it was grand. So I think... I think that's what Andy Farrell is like.
He's like Ace Ventura.
Yes.
He lives in a one-bedroom apartment and it's stinking. It's just covering like mangy, stinking dogs just doing their thing.
Yeah.
Being proper dogs.
Yeah. Shitting and pissing everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. All over England.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being foul to England.
Who came here thinking they might learn something about rugby?
Well, do you know who was foul to England? Potty mouth Fla. We get Fla on. Jerry Flannery, ladies and gentlemen. We got there. Oh, he's come all the way from upstairs. Didn't he?
Very unprofessional, aren't we?
Any minute now. How beautiful is this place? It's unreal, isn't it? Here he is, Jerry Flannery. So
he's had enough.
Was it something I
genuinely?
Something I said.
Take us back to that moment. 65th minute, Twickenham, 18-21. Ireland are beating England. Scrum under the posts, under your posts, and you win a penalty. Nigel Whitehouse, I think, was the ref, gives you the penalty, and you come up out of it and go, "That's twice, you fat." What exactly happened? What did he do twice?
You can never be nice to me. I always pick out the stuff, the bad points for my career. Because generally, when you play a game for Ireland, your mum is delighted. But like, I played for Ireland, but then my mum was so disappointed that I'd sworn, and that I, you know, she was so embarrassed that the language I use as well, that hard C word that you use.
Sorry.
But it was literally a case of, I suppose, I think I got in a box, and then I got another box, and it was a case of me just trying to get stuck into Steve Thompson and make as much noise as possible, because he is way bigger than me, and I was like, referee, get in here and break this up pretty quick. So I was make as much noise as I could.
Did your mum tell you off?
Yeah, of course.
Really?
Because Roy Lugin came on and he just goes, oh, sorry about that language there from Jerry Flannery. And I was like, oh, he name-checked me as well.
He told on you.
So that's like an uppercut in the scrum where you're like completely defenseless like this.
Yeah, I think it was actually Danny Grucock who did it in the end. And I copped that afterwards. But it was too late. I couldn't take it back. I said, sorry, you're not actually at...
Yeah.
I just had to stick with it.
Yeah, look. We want a little bit more dog in the Irish team. So that's a great example of it. So if they just go out and start doing that at the weekend... can make a big difference.
Yeah, it's like the dog. They say the smallest dogs make the most noise. Like a little Jack Russell. Rawr!
That reaction, you kind of throwing the toys out of the pram with Thompson, was similar to the reaction whenever I mentioned Justin Harrison on an episode a while back. And I wonder if those are those two the two types of people that you have an issue with, or
what do you mean by two types of people?
Like, is there a theme here?
The stereotypical Australian bogan,
yeah,
bit of a
stereotype,
yeah.
Or I mean, Steve Thompson is a stereotype as well. He's, you know, he's that English kind of Cockney, overweight.
And you did volley that French stereotypical player as well, the kind of lad with the flowing hair. Have you got an issue with stereotypes?
No, but you've created some sort of narrative where you tried to weld these guys into it and make out I have.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty conclusive you've got an issue with stereotypes.
Yeah. No.
You heard it here first.
Well, look, take us back to that game. Both of you were playing. I think everyone remembers that game very well. as Triple Crown win for Ireland. Rodgers chip, O'Driscoll gathers, Horgan makes a break, Lewis Moody pulls him down the corner, we play another couple of phases, Strings throws a pass over the top, and Horgan scores, brilliant finish in the corner. And, you know, I think that was the 78th minute, was it? Both of you were on the field. What was that piece of play like for you? Can you remember it, or was it just hectic?
I wasn't on the field.
Oh, you were gone.
I got taken off. It wasn't actually, it was going very well for Ireland. It wasn't going that well for me.
Right.
But it was going fine, but Dennis Hickey, I think, came off the bench.
Okay.
And he was a lot better.
Yeah. Your memories of it?
It was weird because it was my first year playing international rugby, and I suppose I'd grown up, you know, the whole thing was beat England. That was, you know, that was a success for Ireland. It didn't matter if we lost every other game as long as you beat England. And I suppose we've been on a little bit of a roll, you know, up to that point. There was a Triple Crown on the line, and I think things just came together. And I remember being in the dressing room before the game and looking around and seeing all the plaques that they have in Twickenham. You know, you're in Twickenham, and obviously you're in Twickenham, you should know that. That's why it's on the plaque.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was, for me, as a young lad growing up and you know, always seeing Ireland getting generally pumped when they went over there, and then seeing the odd result, and it was such a big deal when we got a result there, that one, you know, when Shaggy scored that try in the corner, it was phenomenal. I was buzzing off it.
And then I suppose 2007 in Croke Park probably be my biggest memory for Ireland beating England as well. What was the week like building into that game for you? Was there something different about it because of being Croke Park? Obviously, there was. Did I hear you had someone come in and kind of talk you through the history of the game that week, or of the what had happened in Bloody Sunday that week?
Not so much. I think it, pretty much everyone in the squad was aware of what happened on Bloody Sunday, but it was more a case of that there was so much stuff being put out in the media at the time about the protests at foreign games being allowed into Croke Park, that we were basically briefed as players to not throw petrol on the fire and go out and start talking about it. So we were trying to focus on the game, and, you know, very much that was where we were at. And then when we actually got to it, you know, like, players are selfish, and you just want to look after your performance. But when we actually got to Croke Park, I remember, like, thinking to myself, this is pretty special here. And, you know, for all the protests and all that happened, I remember being quite anxious about what was going to happen for the national anthems, particularly for the English national anthem, because you'd seen so many images of people who were so irritated at the fact that rugby was being played in Croke Park, that you just, you know, you're trying to focus on your performance, but you're still thinking something's going to happen here. And I think when God Save the Queen was sung, and there was, you know, it was respected, I think that was, I remember it was a big, big, huge relief for all of us really involved. And then to have our own Nevean sung and you know, Ireland's call as well, then I remember thinking to myself, this is pretty special here, because I would never normally sing the national anthem, because I used to find it, like, I'd get emotional. And then I was thinking, like, if I'm not going to sing it in Croke Park, like, whenever you're going to sing it. And I just remember thinking this is really cool. And then how the game unfolded then was phenomenal. Like, the display that the players put on was incredible.
Yeah. I think 1 in 5 or 6 wins in Twickenham.
Yeah.
Tough place to go.
So that time Shaggy scored, 2006, and then I was involved in a team that won one more. I'm trying to think if I was even, I often remember these things being on the sideline, and I'm not sure if I was 24th man, if I started and got taken off, which happened quite a bit. I'm not sure exactly what the context was, but 2007 was certainly very special. You know, I had my jersey stolen.
In 2007?
Yeah, I, so obviously...
After the Croke Park game?
Yeah. Wow. So I knew, obviously, how significant it was, and it was such a big win. It was such a class performance. And I went around the change room, got my jersey signed by everyone. 22 it was, which, you know, not ideal.
Yeah.
I got signed by everyone, and I was like, this is really significant. This is massive for me. This is a really big achievement, being part of this. And I would look back, you know, and that was a very special memory and a special something to remember it with. And I stuck it into my bag and left it in Killiney Castle over the weekend. Came back in on Monday morning and the bags had all been rifled through and it was stolen. Probably by someone in this room.
Arsonists always return to the scene of the crime, so it could well have been. Looking ahead to the weekend, the team was announced today, same starting 15. Caelan Doris is the only addition outside of in the 23. Obviously, after the hiding we got in the Aviva last year and then going to Twickenham before the World Cup, took another big beating. It does still seem like we might be going into the weekend as favourites. Would that be, I think that's somewhat on people's minds after what has happened over the last few weeks. What are your thoughts on that?
I think, like, when you hear myself and Andrew talking about, like, our encounters with the English team to now, I think there's a big, big difference off the back of Joe Schmidt's reign, that whereas before beating England was enough, now I think that Irish teams, they're looking to win championships and Grand Slams, and I don't think any of the Irish team will have any fear of going to Twickenham and getting a result. I think on the other side of it, I think the fact that Billy Vunipola is out, Mako Vunipola now seems to be out. Mm. Manu Tuilagi could be back in, will probably be back in. But I think taking the two Vunipolas out, that has a huge effect because they're two of the best players in the world. And I think Ireland have momentum now. They have momentum going into it. And I think if you... A really important thing is that if you try and put yourself in the players' position, the English players and the Irish players... The English players are disappointed off the back of their World Cup result. But anyone who supported England during the World Cup, they'll have been really happy with how they performed because they played fantastic rugby. They got to a final, they lost. So it's not like the English players are coming back saying, we've got a point to prove, whereas the Irish players coming into camp now with Andy Farrell will have been coming in for this Six Nations saying, We underperformed at the World Cup, and we really have a point to prove to show that we're that much better. And I think, Ireland were probably had a bit of fortune in the first game against Scotland, but I thought the Welsh result was massive. And I think that Ireland will be going over now really, really hungry, and I think that England are going to be weaker without the two Vunipolas, and I think that Ireland have got good momentum off the back of the last two results.
Compare that to this time last year, whenever England came over, and they had a point to prove, and they spanked us. Just beat us out the gate just because maybe the mindset we were off the back of 2018 where it was so easy for Ireland. It just seemed to turn up and it all just clicked, and then England just said no we've had enough of that, and they were massively up for it. And there's a lot to be said about an emotional you dig deep and you get emotional and you kind of bring out this massive physical performance, probably similar to what we talked about 2007. There's an emotional attachment to something, and then a team's got a point to prove. And
That's probably one of the challenges for Eddie Jones, is to try and go, and I know we've Scott Fardy here as well and Fiona, and it'd be interesting because they both would have come off the back of Fiona losing in a World Cup semi final, Scott losing in a World Cup final, and I'm keen to to hear what they're like. Someone has to highlight that, say, listen, there's going to be a lull now after this. We need to go and find our hunger again. And I'm sure that's a big challenge for Eddie Jones. I think he's tried to freshen things up a little bit in the squad, but their initial two performances would tell you that they haven't done enough there. Mm-hmm. And I think, look, it bodes well for Ireland.
Yeah. Tactically, obviously, we kicked a lot last week against Wales, had a nice variety of kicks. Is that something, I think that's what England did when they came here last year. They put our back three under pressure, kind of got that momentum early in the game. Is that something that you think will work this weekend? Have we got a similar mentality, or do you think they can, I suppose, change up the game plan according to who they play against, or is it?
I think looking at watching rugby all the time now, I think that the teams that have the most rounded game plan that can use whatever tool is best to beat the opposition are the teams that are most successful. I think Leinster are a really good example of that. Like, you watch them play against the Cheetahs there last week in lashing rain, and they played a really effective kicking game, pressure game. But when the weather is good, they can move the ball around as well. And I think that, you know, I think Ireland have that scope. I think that, you know, if conditions are bad, if weather is bad, that Ireland can deal with that. But I think that they showed that they have they can move the ball around as well. So it's never going to be just one thing. Like it's have the ability that if England are showing space in the backfield, that Ireland can exploit that. If England are marking the backfield and the kicks aren't behind, aren't on, that Ireland are comfortable enough to move the ball. And I think that that's, everyone wanted to see that progression from Ireland because we know how good the players are. And you know, I think that's
okay. Well, I think we'll get some predictions. We have if anyone have been tuning in over the last few weeks, we've been using our Match Point Guinness Pint Predictor, which there is a few leagues that we're all involved in. I'm kind of kicking your ass at the moment. You're dragging your arse, to be honest with you. You're way down. So basically, yeah. The idea is, go on, talk us through it.
Okay, so we butchered this at the last live show. I know you're all eagerly anticipating something similar. but what you have to do, it's not too late to get involved. You got to just do the following. Download the Match Pint app and get on the Pint Predictor. Enter the House of Rugby League, enter the code HORIE, and then take a screenshot of you in the league and post it with the hashtag HORIE.
Amazing. Pat is then going to pick out two winners who will be in with the chance of winning tickets to Ireland versus Italy in the Viva in a couple of weeks. Is that all right? Correct, Pat. We might do our pint predictors now, just to get out of the way. So, what's the first game of the weekend? Is it Wales and France? No? We'll go with that one. Wales versus France.
Wales, France. That's really hard. I think I'm probably going to look at Wales. I'm going to go Wales probably 17-12.
17-12. So
that's Wales by five.
Wales by five. I'm going to go France by six.
That's crazy.
No.
That's your heart speaking, not your head.
I'm telling you, I'm ahead of you in the league. I
know
that's
a man who's never played Six Nations. I'm going to go Wales by, what'd you say?
If you're going Wales, then I'm thinking I'm not going to change. Because you've been rubbish so far. I said Wales by five.
Wales by six.
Okay.
Oh, you coward. And
Italy, Scotland, start here.
Where is this one?
Where is this match on? Italy.
Scotland by 22.
Scotland by...
Gasps from the crowd. It's so dramatic.
Scotland by 10.
Scotland by 12.
Scotland by 12. Okay. Ireland, England, I'm going to go Ireland by 7.
I don't think it's going to have that scope. I think Ireland by 4.
England by 2.
Oh.
Listen.
He's going for the homeland.
You can listen. I've made 2 prank calls the last 2 weeks, and I'm very keen
you're
make a third.
Yeah. Also, you can if you guess the correct score, or if you get ahead of someone
points.
In the league within 3 points, you win a pint on the pint predictor, or you can gift that pint. Over 30,000 pints have already been won or gifted, so have a go at that. But we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in about 10 minutes. With Scott Fardy and Fiona Cochran. Thanks a bit. Yeah.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Okay, welcome back to Cafe and Sen in Dawson Street in Dublin. Woo! Flav's still with us, but let's get some more guests on the show, shall we?
Yes. Let's do that. We have a Leinster stalwart. He's made a massive name for himself in the last couple of seasons, dominating Leinster and leading by example. Scott Fardy. Woo!
Where is he? Oh, he's coming from upstairs as well.
Travelling from Australia. Thank you. Hey, Scott.
And we also have, and are delighted to have, a Dublin woman that has played all of provincial rugby in Leinster, a holder of an unbelievable 85 test caps for Ireland, and captain of the 2013 Grand Slam team, Fiona Coughlin. Here they are. Good man, Pat. Hello there.
Howdy.
There's Scotty. Nice, mate.
Nice,
Scotty. Sorry.
Oh, jeez. I was wondering how this was going to work.
Scott, have you ever felt further away from Australia, Sydney in particular, than you did in the piss and rain on Saturday in the RDS?
Yeah. Well, jeez, awful conditions, but yeah. All part of the game, though, isn't it? Like, it's a different way of playing the game, and... once I recovered, it was enjoyable, but yeah. Shivering. I was actually annoyed I came off because it was worse. When you're running around, it's all right, but as soon as you stopped, it was awful.
Well, playing in those conditions and winning as well as you did in those conditions, you always think is something that comes with a lot of experience. We had some young lads in the team that day, like Deegan, Frawley, Kelleher, Luke McGrath, that are going out and just playing in those conditions and winning so convincingly. And under, you know, complete control. I was blown away by that. Is that kind of the vibe in Leinster at the moment? There's guys that are coming through that are just have that much experience or ability?
The young guys are just this unbelievable measured and unbelievable mature for, you know, at their age, you know, I was still in the nightclub at that stage. You know, I wasn't ready to play the cheaters in the rain and win. So, boy, like... I thought we managed the game really well, and that was the key drivers in the 10, the 9s, and the line-out callers. Ross Maloney, I thought, was excellent. So, those guys were fantastic. And, as I said, they're just so mature and just so ready to perform at this level. So,
Fiona, the girls, like, speaking of weather, the girls had a worse time against Wheels a couple of weeks ago. Hailstones.
It was nice for 52 minutes, and then it went drastically wrong. Yeah. It was horrific. Like, I thought the ref might wait until 60 minutes and then call it, but thankfully it cleared up a little bit, but it was miserable. I don't know how they played in it.
Pat was so concerned that the girls weren't going to get a warm shower after the game. He came in, he was like, did you hear? Didn't know it was massive news, Pat. But the girls are going great at the minute.
Yeah, look, it's after the last couple of seasons, they've been quite poor, and they really need the 3 home wins this season, and it kicked off well. The first game against Scotland, they played well for 20 minutes, but like luckily won it, and then really good performance against Wales, up against it now this weekend. But to be honest with you, I think the 3 home wins, that ranking, world ranking place is really important for the qualifying tournament for the next World Cup in October, so that's definitely what they'll be looking for.
Just, I have to be honest, because... I would have coached against Scott for the last few years with Munster, and he's a guy I would have had massive respect for. At the time, I hated him because he was so effective for Leinster all the time. But getting to chat to him upstairs, there was a lot of things that, like, just had a lot of questions. And one of the ones, Scott, I want to ask you is your journey coming over to Leinster, because you've had such a massive impact on the province since you've come. But I'm sure that, you know, you weren't short on offers to go to other clubs as well. And I wanted to see what your perception was of coming to Ireland, because I'm sure you had a lot of your teammates as well probably had offers to go abroad. And I think the idea is that, like, if you pick a certain club in France and you chat to your partner and say, listen, we can go here, and we know that there'll be a ready-made group of maybe 10 to 12 foreign players, and you can assimilate in with them straight away, and, you know, the weather is going to be really nice, and, you know, we can, you know, I'll cruise on through because I have a big profile. As a marquee foreign player. But you went the other way, and I'm not sure if you were aware at the time that you were coming over to Ireland. The weather is miserable, like you saw last week. But also the fact that you're coming into a club like Leinster, where when they sign a player, you've got all of these fantastic young players who are looking to see. They want to see you perform. They want to see how you prepare, and they want to see, you know, a guy who's going to enhance the culture, which is obviously, you know, in the latter stages of your career, is an awful lot of pressure to put on yourself. Were you aware that you were opening yourself up for that?
I wasn't aware of that. Honestly, I was, like, I remember having the discussions about where we're going to go, and I was always to my wife saying, you know, I wanted to go overseas and I wanted to play in Europe. And my wife was like, well, we should go to France. And she kept saying it. I was like, were nearly married, so I was like, no, I don't really want to go to France because it didn't really interest me playing in France. Obviously, you know, there's room for that, and some guys love that kind of rugby, but from afar, we used to get a lot of French rugby on Australian television, and I'd watch about 20 minutes and I'd just kind of get over it. So I kind of turned it off, and I wasn't kind of interested in that game. And I'd also heard other stories of guys who haven't had the best time in France, and a number of guys, one of the older players that I played with, hadn't had the best time there. So in terms of France is a great country, and I'd love to live there one day, possibly. But
I don't think they're going to take you at this stage. Yeah, no, you're bagging them.
Yeah, but I think, like, for me, it was about playing in the big games over here, and still learning. I think that's really important at my age, even that you're still learning things and seeing things from a different perspective. And coming to Leinster was great for that. You know, I came here, and you know, we're competing for European silverware every year, and well, the last 3 years and been here, and obviously they made the semi-final the year before I got here, and that's what I want. You want to play in those big games, and some of my greatest memories in my career have definitely been here in wearing the blue of Leinster.
We had Ulster at one stage, 3 or 4 years before have you heard of Ulster? does it ring a bell? We were trying to sign Victor Vito at one stage. And apparently it was going well for a while, and then people started talking about how, you know, he was chatting to La Rochelle, and I'd been in touch with Victor Vito because I was injured 1 year and he was injured. We both did like Rugby Players Association, where we were the rep for the players. So I spent the day with him, and kind of our director of rugby, Brent Cunningham at the time, said, would you keep in touch with Victor Vito? Because the reason why he was keen to go to La Rochelle is because his wife's a real foodie, you know, loves French culture, French food. And then I was like, well, it's not really the same going to Belfast. But he made me, our director of rugby made me send him two links to two Michelin star restaurants in Belfast. He didn't fall for it.
Yeah.
And then I think he was the top 14 player of the season then the next year. So I think he made the right decision. But whenever you were, you know, weighing up stuff, like what was your impression of Irish rugby? I know we chatted about this a couple of weeks ago. Were you familiar with, like, first of all, Six Nations, or even kind of what was going to be required of you from Leinster?
I actually toured here a long time ago in 2006. So we played, I was in the Waratahs Academy at the time, and we played at the Leinster A at that point. So I came here, and we spent 3 days on the piss after it, and I loved it. So totally different experience. So we played on, like, the Sunday, and it was the kind of, you know, it was an academy tour, so, you know, it wasn't that well funded. We stayed in army barracks up in Belfast, and then we came down here, and we stayed in some hotel on the north side here, and we just loved, but we had, like, it was Freshers Week. Is it Freshers Week when?
Yeah.
Trinity and stuff. So we were like, this is great. Like, so my idea of Dublin.
You've got the wrong impression of Belfast.
Yeah. If
you have to stay in an army barracks.
Yeah. We stayed in army barracks in Belfast. We stayed down the road from Trinity when it was Freshers Week. So we had it was Monday of the Freshers Week, and we were in the bar in Trinity and having a great time because we'd finished our tour. So my impression of Dublin was I'd always enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the people. And obviously you meet a lot of Irish people in Australia as well. So, I then came back here and played Test here as well and really enjoyed the country. And it was always, surprisingly, everyone talks about the weather, and I actually don't mind the weather. I know it gets wet, and this month's particularly bad, but the summers are nice and there's lots of light in the day, so I've never had a trouble with the weather at all.
Mm. Fiona, you had a similar experience when you left Dublin and came to Limerick.
Living the high life in Limerick.
Similar move from Sydney to Dublin. You came to college in Limerick. I remember it so well because Fiona's team, the UL Bohemians team back then, won everything. They must have won. How many AOs did you win? 7, 8?
12.
12, sorry. Jesus Christ. When I saw that Guinness ad over the World Cup of the Japanese women's team, who were pioneers, and I was like, that's what you were back then. You were pioneers for women's rugby. your legacy lives on. I mean, to have won the 2013 Grand Slam with all those players like Lane Campbell and Joy Neville and just all those players you had and what you'd gone through, you epitomised for me what it meant to be a rugby player and what it meant to be a teammate. And ye had a tough slog, what you had to do and how much travelling you had to do up and down from Dublin. And just the camaraderie and the bond ye had was something like so special. Can you talk me through that? Was that a natural thing? Was that just a hard slog to get that? Is that what brought you close together?
I suppose you don't really know how bad things are until you get better and you know the good things. Yeah, like the first couple of years, Bowes, actually, we were treated better than we were with Ireland. You know, UL Bowes, they put us with really good coaches at the very start. Barry even coached us. He got he got a free weekend away to Denmark or something.
I coached him in a sevens tournament in Denmark. And they beat every team like 100-0. And I had a whistle and a can on the sideline. I was like, just give the ball to Joy Neville.
Yeah, but like at the start, UL Bowes really wanted to be the best team in the country, and they put really good coaches in place. Cosy was our first coach, and I think I kind of was spoiled for choice at the start having him as a coach. And the teammates around us, like, we were wooden spooners for the first couple of years. Like, didn't know, we scored a try against England, I remember, in Twickenham in 2004. It's where we'd won the game. Like, they had 60 points on us or something. We scored one try and we were jumping around the place. But we could see progression every year. Yeah. And we had a really good core group of players. You mentioned Joy, Lynn, Maz, the likes of those that have been around for a number of years. And then we got a few fresh faces every year. And then we ended up with a really good management team. Goose was our coach, and he was really good at certain things, but he knew his limits as well, and he brought people in around him, and they just were a really good management team. And I remember 2012, we went to the south of France, and we missed our connecting train from Paris down to the south of France because we couldn't fly to the south of France for whatever reason. And we played the next day, and the game had to be brought forward because the pitch was freezing, and we'd like 2 hours sleep on an overnight train that I thought would be like the Orient Express, which it's not. It's more like a cattle mart. But anyway, we actually played really, really well that day, and we lost by a point. But when we got back, all the media coverage, because the media had never covered us before, all the media coverage was about the train journey, and it pissed us off because we actually played really, really well and no one spoke about the game. And the girls were like, well, like, what do we have to do to get a little bit of recognition? I was like, we have to win. Now, I really didn't envisage us winning the next year, the Grand Slam the next year, but thankfully things kind of fell into place. We had some really good performances and we did win the Grand Slam.
Yeah. I mean, to go... Yeah. to go from that, like... At the start, losing 17-0 to England, and then a few years later, beating them, winning a Grand Slam, then beating the All Blacks or the Black Ferns in a World Cup, and then losing in a semi-final. I mean, that's an incredible journey. You're obviously still very close to that group to this day.
Friends for life. Like, yeah. I think what you go through on a sporting pitch with those people, like, it was our life. Do you know what I mean? They were your best friends and still are my best friends, and I'd be on the phone every day to them through WhatsApp, whatever, and still really ingrained in the women's game and really passionate about it and where it's at. And yeah, like losing that semi-final to England, it wasn't so much losing the semi-final to England because we kind of had said to ourselves, look, where we should be is top four, and England are a better team than us, but it was our lack of performance on the day that was really cutting, because we normally perform quite well against England, although we've only ever beaten them once. We normally perform quite well against them, and we didn't. We just bombed out, and that was the gutting thing, because the whole country, in fairness, was behind us after beating the Black Ferns, and to bomb out like that was really disappointing, and then have to play again 4 days later was even worse.
Oh, yeah. Never imagine how you do that.
What about, from your perspective now, obviously... doing a lot of commentating and watching a lot of rugby. Earlier on, you were saying you watch one match every night. Is that right?
Thereabouts, yeah. Because I'm covering the women and the men's games, and sometimes the 20s games. So you kind of have to be up to it, really.
Monday morning, I walk into the studio and I say, "Pat, did Ulster win at the weekend?" He says, "Yeah, you were commentating." but it's obviously life's so busy, and you're obviously a full-time teacher as well. And yeah, so you're doing well, squeezing it all in, and you're doing an incredible job.
Cheers.
You were saying you're friends with life, or friends for life with the girls. Have you ever found yourself in a tricky situation where they do something where you have to be critical of them, or?
Yeah, particularly at the start. I at the current squad, I only played club with a couple of them, and Larissa Muldoon was the only one that I played international with. But the 2017 World Cup was particularly difficult because they weren't playing well, and a lot of my friends and teammates from 2014 were on that squad. But I suppose for the integrity of the game and the integrity of what I do, I have to call it out as I see it. And I would always say it to their face anyway, so it's not as if I was just dishing them on TV. I would always say it to their face, and even after every game I would have rang them. I'm sure they saw my phone number coming up going, oh, fuck, she's going to be giving us an earful now. But look, I know they respected me. Likewise, I respected them from what we'd been through together. And yeah, like as I said, it was all just honesty, and I think the better for the game, because if something happened on the TV and I'm not calling it out, like, I look like a dope and the game looks terrible.
Yeah. Fards, when I hear Fiona talking about World Cup semi-final and how hard it is to lose that, I haven't met anyone that has played and lost in a World Cup final. Incredible achievement, obviously, getting there, and you played so well. And I remember that Bledisloe Cup game you played before the World Cup. You're incredible. And then had a brilliant World Cup in an unbelievable back row yourself, Michael Hooper and Pocock. From the final, like, what's your... Is that a hard memory for you to think back, or what are your takeaway memories?
It just goes a flash. Like it happened so quick. I remember being just a crazy quick game, and then winning that, you know, that last 10 minutes of the first half and the first 10 minutes of the second half, and just cost us so dearly. And yeah, like it was. It's disappointing, and looking back on it, we didn't win it. So that's what we're all about. We had this grand plan of going and winning it, and that doesn't happen. And there's a big, you know, kind of hole there. Yeah, but yeah, well, I'm well over that, and I've gone on to play in big games here at Leinster as well. So that helps recover from that.
Yeah,
I guess like when you finish it, I don't envy guys going into a World Cup campaign. I think I said it to you when I saw you the other week. It's just so mentally tough. You know, such a long slog for them. You know, you're away from July to November. I think I was home for 3 or 4 days in that space, just on the road in hotels. You don't do your laundry, you don't cook, you don't do anything you normally would do. So, you know, by the time that's all kind of over, you're pretty happy to get home.
Yeah.
So, do you think we were talking just before you came on about the knock-on effect of, you know, like when you lost to the All Blacks and when you lost to England? I don't think anyone would have ever criticised you really, because it's really the only the All Blacks that when they lose, that people just say, oh, they're losers. Like, the fact that he got to the World Cup semi-final, Fiona, was a pretty phenomenal achievement, and the country was massively positive about it. And the fact that as Australia, I know you would have seen that, like, we can go on and win the World Cup, but it wasn't so much an expectation. So there's no real disappointment when you come off the back of a World Cup campaign like that. But how do you get yourself back up? And you think that England are going to struggle now off the back of how they went at the World Cup versus Ireland, who are obviously feeling that they have a point to prove. Do you think that's going to have something to play this weekend?
Yeah, I think England, they're still a bit all over the place in their squad selection. You look at the back row and him moving Curry to number 8. I don't think it's working at the moment for him. I really don't see where he's going. You take a player out of where he's playing phenomenally well and move him to a new position. So I think there's a bit of confusion there. He doesn't really know who his best 9 is. Is it Hines? Is it Youngs? I think Tuilagi, if he comes back in, that disruption, do you start Farrell or 4 to 10, or do you move Tuilagi at 13? And there's Slade there as well. So I don't think Jones is as settled. However, I do think they're a squad that can rise it for one game, and I think we saw that in the World Cup. I don't think they played particularly well in the World Cup, but they played phenomenally well against New Zealand. So I think they can pull it out of the bag for one game, and particularly at home. But I just think Ireland at the moment, I like the way that they're starting to play. You can see that they have got over the World Cup, that it's on an upward trajectory, and players have a lot more confidence in themselves. So I think Ireland are a better place going into it. It's just that away from home factor.
Do you think there's anything in the theory about Ireland performing better whenever they're less well-groomed dogs?
Yeah, I was hearing the dog chat earlier. I was like, I wonder what dogs were going to be called.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
in the past, dog. I suppose Ireland have performed better when they were underdogs. But I suppose that's...
Yeah. Oh,
well worked. Touché. Well done.
Yeah, but I think they need to get over that, and they're good enough players to get over that. And when they're playing for the Providence, particularly the Leinster boys, you know, they're at the top of the game, and that's where they expect to be. So
they're top dogs.
The top dogs. So yeah, look, I think it's more of a mental thing. They'll be physically prepared. They have the right team selection, I think, and it's that mental side of it. And they're stung and they're sore from last year against England.
Just talking about all the, you're saying the momentum that's coming from the Leinster team, and Scott, you'd be playing with a lot of these young lads and they're coming through, and it doesn't seem to matter who lines out from 1 to 15 for Leinster now. They just seem to perform. But just putting yourself in the shoes of a lot of those young players coming through, you had quite a circuitous route to get to where you have been in rugby, in terms of, I think it was at 24 you left the force and went to Japan. And then ended up at 26, then getting your first cap, coming back to the Brumbies, then getting capped. But, you know, that's how do you see that things are going to work out now? Can Leinster, like Leinster, eventually, these players are going to start stockpiling there at the moment. Where's that going to go for them?
To Ulster. I guess,
particularly back row, but it's a position where you pick up a lot of injuries. So, you know, you've got two world-class back rows out at the moment, in Jack Cohen and Dan Levy, and we've got, you know, sevens in, you know, obviously Josh is with Ireland. We've now got Will, Max and Kaelin all with Ireland. So there's still opportunities for a guy like Scott Penny to play a lot. Josh Murphy is, you know, he does a fantastic job for the province
Dan
all the time.
Dan Levy to come back
so well
in a mix.
Yeah, and Reece Ruddock as well. So all those guys, they can do a job. And, you know, it's a balancing act. And I don't envy Leo's job at any time because, you know, he's got to make some tough calls, especially when it comes to those big games. But I don't think anyone can complain that I get a shot, because everyone gets a chance to, you know, to start for Leinster and play well and play in games, and that internal rivalry is, I think, drives performance. So knowing that, you know, you have a poor game and the next guy come in and take your spot, so you've got to make sure that's going, and it happens at training, and you're constantly competing with guys at training, much to my 35-year-old detriment to trying to deal with 21-year-old kids full of beans, taking my head off in malls. But I think, you know.
Do you think you feel better now, having started a little bit later?
Yeah, I think, it does help. I mean, some guys are, you know, genetically, you know, we were talking about it today with Brad Thorne. You know, he was playing rugby league at like 19 for the Broncos or 20, and then, you know, then going on and playing so many games, he was just such a genetic freak where, you know, this ability, and then also on the back end of that, he was such a good pro, it looked after his body so well. So there is examples of guys that start early and, you know, finish late, but you know, probably starting late and 3 years in Japan was great for the body as well. So you know, allowed me to play a bit longer. And
what did you feel was actually restricted your progress? Because to go from 24 and possibly, you know, not progressing as you want with the Western Force and going to Japan, to suddenly 26 years of age and you're like, what was the, was, it, was it performance?
When I was just, so it was four super teams in Australia at that time, and there's no rotation in the super squads at all, so there was no chance of me getting unless there's a run of injuries, there was no chance of me getting a run at the Western Force at that time. The coach wasn't a fan, like Simon from Sydney, but then, you know, really I was pretty, you know, lucky to hold a pad at some points. But yeah, so then there was no real option, and so went to Japan from there, and then I just didn't really get a shot, didn't get a chance to play. So I'm not a great trainer, I never have been. I'm not a great gym kind of trainer, I don't really like it that much in the gym. As when I finish playing, I don't think I'll be in much of a gym goer. So you know, you look at the numbers and those things and guys will, you know, probably don't look like the greatest athlete in rugby. I just have to play to be noticed in some way. So, and I probably didn't get that chance in that time. And I wouldn't change it, to be honest. You know, I've met some great people along the way. I've met a great mentor in Japan, in a guy called Peter Alatini, played for the centres for the All Blacks. And he was fantastic for me when I went over there, and someone who, you know, showed me how to play the game differently and taught me to enjoy the game, which was fantastic. And you know, all those people that you meet along the way, you know, make you the player I am today, and you wouldn't change that for
the rotation seems to be the thing that was missing in your career, the ability to get an opportunity. But and Leo's obviously giving opportunity to all of these different players, but at some stage those players are going to are either going to get pissed off because they're not getting a regular start. So where do they go from there? Is it going abroad? Is it at the moment? Obviously they're working their way around the provinces, which is good for Irish rugby. But
yeah, well, I'm not sure. It's up for the individual, and that player is still going to be in front of you. And sometimes it's the argument is, well, can you beat him from the inside or beat him from the outside? So if you go to another province or go overseas, it's going to be difficult to beat that guy if you're not, training with what we think we have at Leinster in world-class coaches and world-class S&Cs and all those things that are making you the player you are. So, and, what's special about Leinster is, like other provinces in Ireland, guys are from Leinster. This is where they want to play, and this is their dream. So, these young kids I see that are running at half time, they're the same kids that are, 10 years ago were doing that and are now playing for Leinster, which is special. And that's a big driving factor for these guys, and it's pretty amazing for a lot of them, which I'm quite jealous of. Is they went to school with each other. They've known each other since they were 13-year-old kids. You see James Ryan put up a photo of him and Max Deegan playing together for Michaels, when they were 12, 13 years old, and then now they're playing together for Ireland, which most of my mates are working on the mines or plumbers or whatever, just roofers and things like that. And back in Australia, we didn't get to have that experience together. And I think that's an amazing journey they're all going on together, which...
Mature, like they're just performing every week, and they're all youngsters. Like, are they any crack?
Yeah, that's why they brought James Lowe in, I think, they're actually great crack. They put up with me, and which is an old grumpy bloke like me, I take the piss out of them a fair bit as well, because they're just so out of touch and so weird. they never work or anything like that. So I like to test them a bit on that factor, because none of them have been north of Liffey either. Like, they're just like south Dublin.
There's nothing wrong with the north side. Yeah.
So there'll be a few north side guys. They're all strictly south Dublin. Yeah. Go to the same places. Eat at the same. So. Straight from South Dublin to Portugal. So that's
Villamore. Fiona, are you seeing anything similar in the women's game? Where is there a conveyor belt coming up? I mean, the performance against Wales was incredible. It was a squad performance. That's what I loved about it. And I love the story of Bevan Parsons now. She's dropped out of the squad to do her leaving cert, which is incredible to think of, how good she is at that age. Is there a lot more girls at that age coming through?
Yeah, I suppose if you look at it, when we all started, we were probably starting in college. There was no underage rugby. Like, to be honest with you, before I went to UL, I didn't even know women's rugby existed, even though I'd been ingrained in rugby my whole life, but watching men's rugby, so I didn't know it existed. To see clubs now having mini girls' teams, youths, and even some schools starting to produce some teams as well is really encouraging, and there's definitely better pathways in place. Ireland have just announced an under-18 international training weekend away in Scotland. Bevan Parsons obviously got her first cap at 16 and has progressed wonderfully, and it's a shame to be losing. I'm a teacher, but I'm like, feck the mocks. The leaving cert's the important thing. But look, she's obviously very focused and driven in her studies as well, and I think she wants to do medicine or something. So, look, she's young enough. She's going to have a fine career ahead of her. But there's loads of those. Dorothy Wall, she's 19. She got her first cap this season. Judy Bobbitt, she was my mascot at one of the games in Ashburn about 6 years ago. She got her first start in November as well. So these girls are coming through with a way better training age than we had when we got to international level. So their skills, their fitness, their understanding of the game is way, way better. So, yeah, we just need to keep improving the pathways to international level.
Okay. And then the weekend, tough one against England. You're going over to, do you?
Yeah, it's on RT, actually. England are a different level. They're now fully professional. For years, it was always like, oh, England are professional. They actually are now in the last 2 years. And, they're a different level. Ireland will compete, hopefully at scrum time. I think England haven't got the best scrummage and props.
Mm. Irish front row is smashing it.
Doing really, really well. And the pack in general, the men's scrum, have improved. But look, England are a different level. You have the likes of Emily Scarrell. I don't know if anyone's ever seen her play, but she is world class. She's an absolute joy to watch. And Katie Daly McLean at 10. Like, they just have that conveyor belt of players similar to Leinster that are just trucking it up. So it'll be a tough one. I think Ireland will be in it probably for the first half, but England will then kick on.
Okay. Any predictions for the men's match then on Saturday?
Yeah, I'm going to go Ireland by 3. As I said. I think squad selection is right. I think Caelan Doris will get a good run out as well, but I think squad selection is right. Not just that they've won the previous two games, but because of the manner in which they're performing and the manner in which they're going. I think the players are confident and in a good place as well. So
I think
Ireland
the 23 are important, like off the bench.
Oh, yeah. Look, yeah. I know it's like they're not just subs or replacements anymore. Mm. You know, they're finishers, and it's really important. The strength of your bench is so important, yeah. Particularly when you see props know they're only going to get 50, 55 minutes and then there's going to be changes. So, yeah, the power of the bench is going to be important. So Ireland by three.
Cool. Scott?
Yeah, I think Ireland by... I think Ireland by 10. I think. I'm just confident that. I think some of the points made earlier, I think without the Vinopola brothers, I think England are a different side. So obviously, Billy taking the amount of tacklers that he does every time he carries. And you see on the back of that, the other players don't get the go forward that they get on the back of Billy. So, and same with the nine. With the two nines, so not knowing exactly which nine they're going to pick at the moment in England, so it'll be interesting to see who they do pick and how they go.
Okay, I love it. All right, look, we've had a great night. Thank you all so much for coming. A round of applause for the Penguins for coming out tonight. Thank you so much to Scott Fardy and to Fiona Coughlin for coming along. A round of applause to the two of them as well, please. Cheers to everyone that was involved in making the show, all the staff in Café on Seine. This has been Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Cheers, Scott.
Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.